You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast right now and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Hey, man, look, I don't know about y'all, but I've been getting chilly because this weather has been changing. Let me say that first and foremost, man. But now that Halloween is over, I hope everybody had a good time, you know, dressing up, passing out candy, eating candy, whatever it was that you were doing during that time. But now, look, if you hadn't been listening to your Christmas music, if you hadn't been watching Christmas movies, if you haven't decorated yet, what are you waiting for, man? Listen, I know what y'all are saying. Look, you got Thanksgiving. I love Thanksgiving too. Believe me, I love the food. I love, you know, being around family. Thanksgiving is awesome. But this is that time of the year, man. It's time to get ready for Christmas. The best holiday, my favorite holiday. Look, call it what you want, but I'm getting ready and I'm already mentally there for Christmas. I already been watching my movies. I've already started decorating. Look, I was blasting Christmas music on November the 1st. Like, that's how serious this is. And just to give you a little idea of how I started off my Christmas, what the first Christmas song was that I played, if you know me and you know me well, Let It Snow by Boyz II Men is my all-time favorite Christmas song. So, you know, I had to start it off with that, you know, and then I blasted their entire Christmas Interpretations album, that Christmas album. Look, A1, no skips. They actually remastered it for this year, so listen to the remastered version. Locked in, man. Shout out to Boyz II Men. But look, man, so many great Christmas songs. I mean, you got Luther, you got so many great albums, man. But as you can tell, if you haven't already, man, I'm excited about it. But yeah, man, it's that time of the year. But look, we got some good stuff to talk about. A lot of it's been going on in the sports world since we last got together. So want to go ahead and jump in. Let's talk some college football, right? Because the updated college football playoff rankings have been released as of Tuesday night. This is the second round of the College Football Playoff Committee's rankings. As you know, the rankings from that were happening all the way up until 2 weeks ago were the AP poll, meaning the AP coaches poll. Those were not the official rankings, but now going forward, these are the official rankings according to the College Football Playoff Committee. So with that being said, let's run down the top 12, and I also include the 13th team as well, because that'll be, well, I'll go top 14. So we'll include the two teams that are the outside looking in for the college football playoffs. So at number one, you got Oregon. Number two, Ohio State. Number three, Texas, who moves up two spots. Penn State moves up two spots to number four. Indiana, three spots to number five. BYU moves up three spots to number six. Tennessee stays put at seven. Notre Dame moves up two spots to number eight. Miami drops down five spots after being upset by Georgia Tech to number nine. Alabama moves up one spot to number 10. Ole Miss moves up five spots to number 11. Georgia moves down nine spots to number 12. Boise State moves down a spot to 13. And then you got SMU moving down a spot to 14. And before I get into this, let me just take a step back, because Alabama, listen, dominated LSU this past Saturday night in Baton Rouge, in Death Valley. So proud of the team and the way that they came out, and they just took over that game. Had the fans going home early. I think it was in the third quarter. They were starting to head to the crib. I mean, Jalen Milroe. That's it. That's all. Jalen Milroe, 12 carries, 185 yards, 4 touchdowns. And that made that 4 touchdown game put him at 8 touchdowns versus LSU. And I think 300 plus rushing yards and 8 touchdowns versus LSU in 2 years. They can't stop him. They cannot stop him. I don't care how many chains they wear. They even decided to bring out a live tiger on the field. Like, they brought out a live tiger. That didn't work. Tony the Tiger didn't help. It didn't matter. LSU, like, it does not matter. Alabama owns LSU. And yeah, they got their win, you know, when they had Jaden Daniels. They had their win when they got Joe Burrow. And then they beat us once when my sophomore year in that 6-9 game. But then we did get them back in the natty. So, hey, there's that. But truth of the matter is, truth be told, man, Alabama owns LSU. Proud of the way the team came out and fought. The game plan on the offensive and defensive side of the ball was outstanding. And if Alabama plays football like that the rest of the way, watch out. Watch out. That's going to be very, very difficult to stop. And that was the most complete game of football that I've seen them play all season long. Aside from that first half against Georgia, this is from first to fourth quarter, the most complete game that I've seen Alabama play. And that was a great sight to see. And this is a great time right now. Let's peak in November, peaking at the right time with that final push heading into the college football playoff. And a lot of people said that they were out of it with those two losses. But some things have happened ahead of them. Some upsets have happened. And now Alabama's right in the thick of it, sitting at number 10, which, in my opinion, should be higher. But I think that 8 or 9, I feel like Bama deserved to be 8 or 9. Notre Dame does not play anybody. Miami got upset. So I don't, to a 5-loss Georgia Tech team. So I don't know how they're one spot above, but the committee, what they really did, and just to give you my thoughts, let's go into the rankings itself as a whole outside of Alabama. Looking at what the committee did, all they did was just take and put them in order. Whoever had 0 loss, 1 loss, and 2 losses, they just, aside from Indiana, they put them at number 5, and they're 10-0. And there's 3 teams that are 8-1 above them, being Ohio State, Texas, and Penn State. Indiana doesn't have any ranked wins on their schedule right now. I don't think anybody that Indiana has beaten is ranked in the top 25 at all. So there's that. No ranked wins for Indiana. BYU, 9-0, sitting at number 6. No ranked wins in the top 25 on their schedule. How are they number 6 in the country? Barely escaped the Utah team, which they got bailed out on a 4th down, a defensive holding call. They should have lost that game. When I look at this, these are my 2 issues. I mean, you know, hats off to Indiana. They're doing their thing. This is the best season that they've had in, I think, in a very long time, or if not in history. They hadn't started off like this. But Indiana and BYU have not played anybody. They haven't. So I'm looking at this and I'm just saying to myself, like, what are we doing? I get there undefeated, but what are we really doing? There's no statistic outside of them having no losses, but there's no ranked wins there. Strength of schedule is clearly not there. So what are we really doing? But yeah, I do think that Alabama could have very well been ahead of Miami or Notre Dame. I get that Alabama has 2 losses. I get it. But I'm just saying, if it was me, in the AP poll, they had Bama at number 9 at least. So I thought at least they would have been at 9. But I'm not going to sit here and fuss about it. But I was just saying, looking at the rankings, that was interesting to me. Especially knowing that Notre Dame is pretty much cruises into it not being in a conference. So Notre Dame needs to get in the conference, by the way. But anyway, yeah, those are my thoughts on the rankings. Looking at Texas, Texas is up there. You know, a lot of people obviously have a problem with Texas being that high. I look at, you know, Texas, and, you know, they did have the loss against Georgia, which was the biggest game on their schedule so far. There is some love being shown to Texas, obviously. And I don't know, you look at it and you say they did have the top 10 win against Michigan. They do, you know, they did beat Oklahoma when they were number 18. They did beat number 25 Vanderbilt. So they have three top 25 wins, but that loss against Georgia, that dominating loss, a lot of people are questioning that, right? How are they number three? But then you have to remember that Miami losing, people losing ahead of them, that you know, obviously, of course, they're going to move up. I'm not saying that they're not, you know, one of the best teams in the country, but the way that it goes, when teams lose, other teams are going to move up. Georgia losing, Miami losing, yeah, Texas is going to be up there. I don't really have a problem with it like a lot of people do, but my biggest problem is when you don't have any ranked wins on your schedule, how are you up there? That is my biggest issue. But looking at the rankings as a whole, let's just look up and talk about what the matchups would be if the season were to end today. As of today, the matchups, your first four conference champions that would be getting a first round bye in into the current the quarterfinals would be Oregon with the number one seed. You have Texas with the two seed. You'd have BYU with the 3 seed and Miami with the 4 seed. And this is, again, assuming that all of these four teams won their conference. And it's important to know that just because you're wherever you're ranked, that doesn't mean where you're going to be seeded. It all depends on your conference, you know, the conference championship that you won and some other factors. So when you see number one next to somebody's name, aside from like the number one overall seed, that would obviously have a one next to them. The seeding is going to look different based off of what the rankings are. And if you've watched the college football playoff ranking show, you'll understand what I'm talking about. So the first round matchups would be your 12 versus 5 would be Boise State going at 13, which would knock. Let me stop this right here. Georgia's number 12. Boise State is number 13. So how would Boise State get in over Georgia? How would Georgia be the first team out? Because assuming that Boise State wins their conference, they would get an at-large bid, which would knock Georgia out of the playoff. So even though Boise State is ranked behind Georgia, if they won their conference, they would kick Georgia out and be the team that got that at-large bid. So just wanted to provide some clarity behind that. So, again, Boise State would get the 12th seed going on the road to 5th seed Ohio State. Notre Dame, 9th seed going on the road to play Tennessee, 8th seed Tennessee. Ole Miss with the 11th seed would go on the road to play the 6th seed Penn State. Number 10, the 10th seed Alabama would go on the road to play 7th seed Indiana. So that would be your first round matchups, and then obviously your teams that would be in the first round bye. Just want to give you guys a quick, you know, preview of that. And again, with Boise State, you know, they aren't necessarily a lock to earn a playoff bid because they do still need to win the Mountain West Conference, but they're one of those favorites out of the group of five, right? And so if Boise State does finish ahead of like the ACC or the Big 12 champion, they would earn that first round bye. So again, in Miami, if Boise State ends up getting, you know, ranking ahead of Miami, they could be the one to get the first round seat, the first round bye, I should say. So a lot of stuff could happen, right? A lot of things that can happen. So again, that first round bye is awarded to the four highest ranked conference champions. So interesting to see. Let's talk about the SEC. So a lot of this stuff obviously is going to sort itself out. But, you know, looking at what's going on in the SEC right now, there's a chance that there could be like a seven-way tie with seven or eight, two-loss teams, something crazy like that. Big game this weekend. Obviously, you have Tennessee going on the road to play Georgia. That is the biggest game this weekend. A lot is on the line. I think that, you know, if you're Georgia, you lose this game, you're out. I think those playoff hopes are done. Certainly the SEC championship game is out the window already. But you look at, again, you see the matchup that I just said, and then also you got Texas A&M that has to play Texas at home. So Texas is going on the road into a hostile environment in a few weeks. So that's going to be a big game to watch out for. That could have a lot, a lot of say-so on who is going to be in the SEC championship game. So, again, another big game to watch out for, right? And just to give you some clarity, right now, Alabama is still alive in the SEC championship game. So if Alabama won out, if Tennessee loses to Georgia and Texas beats Texas A&M, Alabama's going to go to the SEC championship game. Now, me personally, I don't think, you know, Alabama really could cruise into the playoff if they went out and not have to go to the SEC championship game, not have to play an extra game. I'm okay with that. But hey, if they get there, it would be great to go get the win, but be the SEC champion, get that first round bye, get some rest, and then you get a home playoff game, right? You get to host one. So there's pros and cons. But ultimately, as long as Bama gets to the playoff, I'm good. but we'll see. A lot of stuff to sort itself out in the SEC. So yeah, we'll see what happens, and we'll follow that closely. And you know, we'll also talk about in a little bit if there's a possibility, would a three-loss team make the college football playoff? But before that, I want to go ahead and move on. And talk about the Chicago Bears and the nightmare that's going on right now with what I am calling what they have been known to be this year, last year, and the year before that, and the year before that, the Bad News Bears. Yes, my Chicago Bad News Bears. I hate to say it, but it's the truth. It's painful to watch. Question is, you know, let me take a step back. Tuesday, Bears just fired their offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, which I am ecstatic about. But the biggest thing here, ultimately, is are they failing Caleb Williams? And the answer to that question is yes. Right now, the Chicago Bears are completely failing Caleb Williams. Again, Shane Waldron was fired on Tuesday. The pass game coordinator, Thomas Brown, is now going to step in as the new offensive coordinator. Who was a heck of a player at Georgia, I would say. I actually, you know, when I looked up his highlights, he was a running back at Georgia and was a baller. I think he ended up getting hurt, and so that kind of threw his NFL dreams out the window. Unfortunately, he has had, an opportunity to call plays in the NFL. He's worked under Sean McVay, and we'll get a little bit more into that. But back to the point. 9 games into Caleb's rookie career, he's already on his second offensive coordinator. Matt Eberflus, head coach, who I feel like needs to be fired. They should have fired him too. Hopefully his firing is coming at the end of the year. But Matt Eberflus is in no position to be able to make decisions for an offensive coordinator. He does not know the offensive side of the ball. He is a defensive-minded coach. He was a defensive coordinator in Indianapolis. He deals with the defense. He is not the person that should be making the decision on who should be coaching Caleb Williams and helping him develop. He is not qualified to make that decision. Ryan Poles should know that. He should know that. And there's no excuse that you allow Matt Eberflus, who picked Luke Getsy for Justin Fields, which was a complete nightmare. And then he turns around and picks Shane Waldron. And guess what, people? Both of them who had ties to the Bears are unemployed in the NFL right now. Luke Getsy was just fired by the Las Vegas Raiders. Shane Waldron just fired by the Chicago Bears. Both with ties to Matt Eberflus in the Chicago Bears organization, who is failing Caleb Williams. Don't know if I said that earlier. I'll say it again. Failing Caleb Williams. Completely missed out on Cliff Kingsbury, who is very familiar with Caleb Williams. Interviewed for the offensive coordinator job. They didn't hire him. For whatever reason, I have no. There's no IQ there when it comes to them being able to pick out somebody who knows how to develop a quarterback. And why would you not go after somebody who has familiarity with the quarterback that you drafted to save your franchise? Like, why? I just don't understand that. George McCaskey, this organization has just been pitiful for the Bears fans. It's tough to watch. It's frustrating. It's painful as a Bears fan to sit there and watch that the last 3 weeks. How we've gone from 4-2 to 4-5. The team looked uninspired, unmotivated, no energy, nothing. Nothing was there. And then there's been a lot that has come out about, you know, the players obviously have expressed frustrations with the way that Shane Waldron was calling the plays, and rightfully so. There's no reason why on a 3rd-and-2 you should be running a wide receiver bubble screen with 2 yards to gain. There's no, any offensive coordinator with a brain knows that that is the dumbest play call you could probably call. You're calling a wide receiver bubble screen on 3rd-and-2. Line up and run the football. Run the football. There was a time where the Bears would get in I formation and hand that thing off to Thomas Jones. Hand that thing off to A-Train, if you know who A-Train is, for all my Bears fans out there. Hand it off to Walter Payton. We'll go even further back. Let's go decades back. Hand the ball off. Matt Forte, I can rack off the running backs. I formation, third and two, I formation, handoff, first down. Like, you're making it harder than what it has to be. Why are we overcomplicating it? And it would get so bad to the point where that last game versus the New England Patriots, that was the most pitiful game I probably watched in a very long time that the Bears have played. One of the most pitiful ones. They could not get a first down to save their life. 3 points against the New England Patriots? That is awful. And that performance that they put up against the defensively, against the and offensively against the Arizona Cardinals, awful. So that firing was 3 weeks late. Let me calm down. Let me take a sip of my water. Hold on. All right. Whew. All right, I'm good. Let's get back to it. So Thomas Brown, again, who's a new OC, previously held play calling duties in Carolina, like I said before, didn't turn out, you know, great, obviously. And people, you know, obviously, you got to look at it from a different perspective. His final game, you know, against the Packers, That was the best game that was called and the most successful game they had offensively in Carolina. But again, this is a different situation. Bryce Young, really the only player on the offensive side of the ball they had. I mean, there's nobody to – there was no line. There was nothing to really work with. I'm not saying that we have a line either, but we have more weapons at least to – you can hand the ball off. You can – get the ball in your tight end's hands. You got 3 wide receivers that you could throw the ball more. I mean, what more could you possibly have to work with? And so I just think that the blocking Bears, they have not blocked for Caleb at all. That play calling and situational football has been garbage. Like I said, Caleb's confidence is so shot right now that he's missing wide open receivers. He's overthrowing. He's underthrowing. He's holding on to the ball too long. You know, that's something that he does need to work on. He's holding on to the football way too long, standing in the pocket, because now they've convinced him that he can't move outside of the pocket. And when he does decide to run, it's when the pocket has completely collapsed. Even when he has had time, when they block well, we haven't done a good job on the offensive side of the ball. We're hitting the open receivers. So there's a lot from top to bottom that needs to be worked on. And the defense, I mean, I don't know what to say. You know, Eberflus, you need to focus on that. Get them together, because you got Green Bay coming into town. Y'all know how much I hate Green Bay. I don't know what I'm going to do if I have to sit there and suffer another loss to the Packers again. It's really going to annoy me. I'm going to be cautiously optimistic about Thomas Brown. I love the energy that he's brought in. I like the way that he has brought a different vibe to the locker room. So we'll see on Sunday. But biggest thing for me, Ryan Poles, he needs to do a better job of prioritizing the offensive line. He has not done a good job in that area. I do love the moves that he's made in the off seasons, the things that he's been, you know, how he's been aggressive. But you can't avoid the offensive line. That's one of the most important. There's the second most important thing to a football team. You got the quarterback, the offensive line. We have not prioritized that properly. So get it done. Go out there, get some linemen that know how to block. I know a lot of people give him a lot of flack because he wasn't a successful offensive lineman in the NFL. But we need to be able to go and find the talent. A lot of other teams in there, there's 32 teams in the NFL, and for whatever reason, we're in the lower half, bottom of the totem pole when it comes to offensive line and developing quarterbacks. That has to stop. It's pitiful, and it has to stop. But they need to sell the team to somebody who really actually cares. And that's my two cents. But before I move on, since 1970, when Perry Moss was the Bears' first designated offensive coordinator, the franchise has never changed offensive coordinators midseason until this past Tuesday. First time midseason firing. I love it. We'll see what happens. So hopefully the head coach is next at the end of the year. But look, with that, look, before we get to our next topic, man, I want to bring up a couple of things to chat about real briefly before we talk college football again. Man, I want to talk about two GOATs right now. Two GOATs. The first GOAT I want to talk about is my boy Drake. If you know me and know me well, you know Drake is my favorite artist. Drake has always been my favorite artist since middle school. Like, I've been rocking with Drake for a really, really long time. That's my dog. And if you a hater, it is what it is. Drake is the GOAT. Drake officially earned his 8th diamond single, which is the second most all time. Let me list off his 8 diamond singles right now. God's Plan, One Dance, Hotline Bling, Work with Rihanna, Life is Good with Future, Sicko Mode with Travis Scott, Love Me with Wayne and Future, and the newest one is No Guidance with Chris Brown. Again, second most all time, 8th diamond single. Shout out to Drizzy, the GOAT. GOAT Drizzy. Looking forward to, look, he got a joint album that's coming out with Party Next Door. I'm excited about that. I can't wait. Whenever they decide to drop it, hopefully we get a release date soon because I'm getting impatient. But, hey, shout out to the dog, Drizzy. And the second GOAT I want to talk about, let's shift industries to the film industry. My boy Denzel, man. If you know me again, you know Denzel's my favorite actor. He has revealed his final films that he will be in before he's going to retire officially. So, those final 5 films are going to be Spike Lee's High and Low, Antoine Fuqua's Hannibal, There's an untitled project right now by Steve McQueen. Again, no title for that yet, but he will be in it. He's going to be in Black Panther 3, as we all know. And then he's going to be in an Othello adaptation. So, or we're just going to say movie. So, an Othello movie. So, those are his five. And you all know he's in Gladiator 2 that's going to be coming out in next week. So, yeah, man, I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready for the GOAT to retire, man. But at least we get six movies from him. Again, including the Gladiator 2. But yeah, I'm excited about the movies. I've never seen a bad Denzel movie. I don't even think one exists. Every movie that I've seen Denzel in has been A1. So, again, just wanted to do we'll call that segment my GOATs of the day. GOATs of the day, Drizzy and Denzel. So, yeah, man, I don't know if I'm ready, but at least we got a really great lineup of movies coming up. So new album for Drake, new movies for Denzel. Look, what more can a fan ask for? So, look, with that being said, let's kick back into things, man. Let's talk college football playoff again, because there's been a lot of talk right now about can a 3-loss team get in the college football playoff? Will a 3-loss team get in the college football playoff? I'm going to say no. A 3-loss team will not make it to the college football playoff. They will not. Not in the first year. I'm not saying it won't ever happen, but I do not think that there will be a 3-loss team in the college football playoff this year. Can it happen? Maybe. Will it? I highly doubt it. And honestly, really and truly, it really depends, and I'm going to tell you this, it really depends on where that 3-loss team is ranked prior to conference championship weekend. There is a scenario out here where LSU could get into the SEC championship game, but it's like 1,000 things that have to happen for that to happen and make it mathematically possible for them to get in. And that would boil down to like the components. I mean, their opponents' combined win percentage versus everybody else, which is a crazy stat that you would even have to go to. When I feel like the head-to-head should just be the deciding factor. Head-to-head should trump all stats when it comes to who can go and who can't. But whatever, the committee just kind of makes this stuff up as they go. So whatever. But it really just depends on where that third team is ranked. If that the 3-loss team is ranked. If that 3-loss team is ranked at like 13 or 14, right? And some stuff happens, maybe. But right now, I do not see it happening. I just don't. I don't think that it's going to happen. A lot of people saying, oh, Georgia deserves to get in with 3 losses because they have the number one strength of schedule. So what? If Georgia loses to Tennessee this Saturday, they are not getting in the college football playoff. Georgia fans, I'm sorry to break it to you. Let it go. It's not happening. All of these analysts on ESPN, wherever they are, who are trying to keep hope alive for Georgia, it's not happening. And I know why they're doing it, because remember, heading into the season, Paul Feinbaum, all these people, I just don't see anybody that can beat Georgia right now. They're just unbeatable. They're just dominating. They're the top dog in college football. Carson Beck. Kirby Smart is just... He's coached these dudes up. Where's that team right now? Where's the unbeatable Georgia Bulldogs that were getting dominated by Alabama in the first half? Yeah, they came back, but that's because Bama let their foot off the gas. They got dominated by Ole Miss. That has not looked good in their big games. And really, really not even big games either. Didn't look good against Kentucky. Let's talk about that. Didn't look good against Florida. Let's talk about that. But y'all are mad that they got dropped to number 12? Didn't look that great against Mississippi State. Let's talk about it. Everybody's talking about how they were so unbeatable, but they have not looked the part. Carson Beck is leading college football in interceptions. He's one of the top statistically when it comes to interceptions in the nation. And with multiple, I think he's like number one, or he's at least top two or three when it comes to multiple picks in a game. He's had multiple games where he's thrown three interceptions. He's way up there when it comes to that. It's not the fact that they lost. Look at how they perform. Look at how they look. And you're going to sit here and tell me that if they were to lose a third game, three out of their four biggest games on their schedule, that they deserve to still be in the 12? And I get it. You look at teams like Indiana and BYU. Okay, that's a fair argument. I can see that. If it came down to Georgia, one of those two teams, I can see the outrage there. But not with three losses. You already see what the committee thinks, putting BYU and Indiana up there. So you mean to tell me that they're gonna sit there and say, oh well, Georgia, their strength of schedule should qualifies them to be able to get in? No, it does not. This is the first time Georgia, oh my God, has finally scheduled a difficult schedule for the first time in my existence, in my 32 years of living. Well, I'm not even gonna say my 32 years because I went in college all the time. Of course, I'm gonna say from the time that I got to college until I graduated, how many times has Georgia actually had a difficult schedule? How many times? We can go back and look. And we can even really go back and look at the last 5-6 years. Georgia's schedules are never difficult. They've always played in the Cupcake East when there was a divisions in you know, East and West in SEC. They always played the Cupcakes. Tennessee has come up now, but Tennessee was the easy dub. Vanderbilt was Tennessee was an easy dub. Kentucky, Florida. I mean, Ole Miss wasn't that great. Ole Miss is actually was in the West, but you know, looking at those teams, when have they really ever had a strong schedule? And they finally do it, and now that just qualifies them to get in, regardless if they have three losses. No, it does not. It doesn't. I'm sorry. It doesn't. So the argument for Georgia, I just don't see that. I really and truly do not see that. So call it what you want, but Georgia's not getting in with three losses, especially when they have not even looked the part. It'd be different if they actually looked good playing and they were losing these games by like 3 points or less, but they haven't. They got dominated versus Ole Miss. Completely dominated. And if Jackson Dart didn't throw an interception on the first drive, they might not have scored a touchdown. Because that was the only touchdown they scored on a very short field. So you sit here and tell me they deserve to go in if they lost. If Tennessee goes into Athens, Georgia and beats them by 10 plus, they are not getting in. They're not getting in if they lose anyway, in my opinion. They're done. If they win, they're good. If they lose, they're out. Period. Period. I don't care if they beat Texas when they were number one. That's cool. What about everything else? What have you done for me lately? What have you done since that? Yes, that carries weight, but that does not automatically give you an automatic ticket to the playoff. It just doesn't. I'm sorry. It doesn't. Let it go. Georgia was so unbeatable. Nobody could touch them. You couldn't see anybody beating them. But now that they've been beaten, now that they looked mediocre, now people are trying to double down because they can't stomach the fact that maybe this Georgia team just isn't what y'all thought they were. Y'all put them on a pedestal. They took over college football, and they have not. They haven't. So, moving along. That's all I got to say. We'll put a bow on that. Let's talk real briefly, man, because we got a fight that's happening very, very soon. I'm talking about tonight between Mike Tyson and Jake Paul. Mike Tyson and Jake Paul are going to go head-to-head. This is actually going to be on Netflix at 8 p.m. Eastern tonight. Looking at this, just to give you a quick rundown. I mean, it's actually wild this is even happening right now. But just to give you a little background about, you know, Tyson, obviously being one of the most dominant boxers in history. You know, first time he reigned as heavyweight champion, November 22nd, 1986. And that was where he beat Trevor Burbick, which captured him that title there. And for the next 30 plus years, Tyson was 10-0 with 9 KOs. 10-0 with 9 KOs. And, you know, all the title belts, was an undisputed champion. His statistics, looking at his landing percentage, he landed 16 out of 34 punches per round, which is 47%, which is nearly 15% higher than the heavyweight division average. Tyson, who overall is record is 50-6 with 44 KOs. He was very effective, obviously, with his power punches, as we know. Landed 55% of his power punches, which is about, is averaged out to 12 per round. And then division average, 39%, he averaged, which is averaging about 9 per round. So those are, you know, a little bit about Mike Tyson. And looking at Jake Paul, who's 10-1 right now, 7 KOs, YouTuber turned into a prize fighter. You call him a prize fighter, whatever. He's a YouTuber who decided to get in the ring. I'm just going to say that. I don't take Jake Paul seriously. I'm sorry. Started boxing professionally. He started in January of 2020, so he's only been 4 years. Fought mostly, you know, former UFC fighters, fellow YouTubers. He had KO wins. His first 4 out of 5 matches were knockouts, but again, this is why I don't take Jake Paul seriously, because he's not fighting actual boxers. Yeah, you're a UFC fighter, but that's different from actually just straight up boxing. So I I can't take that serious. The fight Friday, the fight tonight is actually going to be, you know, they're going to be 2 minute rounds. 14-ounce gloves. So, you know, they're regularly 3 minute rounds with 10-ounce gloves. So we'll see what happens there. You know, those are just wanted to tell you that to let you know about the differences. Let's look even further at Tyson and Paul. Tyson's 58, Jake Paul's 27. You look at, you know, 31 years is the age difference, you know, between them. 47, it's a difference in Tyson's fights before Paul was even born in 1997. 24 years since Tyson last fought professionally, which was a 6-round loss to Kevin McBride. That was back in 2005. 47% of punches, you know, landed by Tyson during his first, reign as champion. Again, like I said, they were nearly 15% higher than the heavyweight division average. Of 32%. And so, you know, I mean, looking at this, who do I think is going to win? Well, again, let's go again. 50-6 record for Tyson. 10-1 record for Jake Paul. Tyson with 44 KOs. Jake Paul with 7. Tyson's 5'10". Jake is 6'1". They both have an unorthodox stance, obviously. But looking at this fight, man, I don't care if Mike Tyson's 58-60. That power that Tyson has, that old man power, he still has a lot of power. You look at his workouts. I mean, I'm taking Iron Mike in this fight. Really and truly, don't really take it seriously anyway. But I'm just hoping that Mike Tyson actually is going out here to fight and not, you know, paid to lose. But I don't think that Mike Tyson is the type of person that's just going to get paid to just take a L. Especially with how much trash that Jake Paul has been talking. I mean, I'm tired of Jake Paul. Somebody needs to get him up out of there. Somebody needs to knock him out. And I think Mike Tyson is the person to do it, even if he's at 58 years old. People think the age is going to, you know, obviously will wear thin on him. But I do think that Tyson, even at his age, is very well conditioned. He's, you know, I think that it really, with Mike, it only takes one or two punches, man. He catches you with that uppercut. That he catches you with a right hook and then an uppercut. After that, it might be night-night. So, Mike, please do us all a favor for the culture and knock this dude out, man. Get him up out of there. We're tired of Jake Paul. He's unserious. He talks trash. He schedules these mediocre people to fight. I mean, I'm sorry. We got to be for real. This is schedule actual fighters. And the first time he actually schedules a legit boxer, of course he's going to do somebody who's 31 years older than him. But Mike, that's all good, bro. Do your thing. Do your thing, Iron Mike. But hey, look, that's all I have, man. I appreciate y'all rocking with me, sticking with me through this episode, man. I know we talked about a lot of good stuff, man. College football, NFL, boxing, some of the sports I love. But keep it locked, man. We'll be back to talk some more next week. See how everything shakes up in the sports world. Excited to dive into whatever happens next, man. So look, y'all be blessed. Have a safe weekend. And as always, Roll Tide. I'm out.